This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Transgender Point of View is an Australian news and current affair panel talk show.
Airing weekly and hosted by Joy 94.9.
Transgender people come from every region around the world, racial and ethnic backgrounds and faith communities.
Chances are that you've met a transgender person, even if you don't know it.
But there are still many misconceptions about trans people.
And as a transgender person, there are a lot
of questions asked of us every day.
What's this about using they as a pronoun?
Isn't letting a trans person use my bathroom dangerous?
Do I refer to you as he, she, it, or they?
So what's your real name?
Are you a drag queen?
What's the difference between sex and gender, and why does it matter so much?
Did you have the operation?
What is stealth?
How does someone know they are transgender?
Really random questions.
Are you sure you're not just super gay?
You must be a transvestite.
What bathroom do you use?
Will I be able to have sex?
What does cis mean?
Welcome to Trans POV on Joy 94.9 with Anastasia, Rowan and Karen. So yesterday, Transgender Day of Remembrance?
Yeah.
Because I feel like after an emotion-packed day, we need something light and something cheerful, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my partner and I were there and I was listening to the Informer show just now and they covered some of the highlights and really poignant parts, and I think it was my first Transgender Day of Remembrance to go to a vigil.
Same, actually. I'd never been to an event before.
Yeah, it was really moving. It was really good.
And I think that the positive thing coming out this year particularly was that I saw a lot more young people and a lot more support from allies. So I think the world is changing for the better.
Yeah, I mean, Seb was there. So do you remember we interviewed Seb a few weeks ago? Yeah. Seb was there from Minus 18.
Oh, yeah, Rachel introduced us to each other and I went, your voice is very familiar.
Yes.
We spoke weeks ago. Oh,
yes.
Nice to actually meet you face to face.
And Y-Gender were there and Out for Australia, I think.
Yes, Out for Australia, yeah.
And some cool musicians between Mirrors played.
And Teddy Darling,
yeah,
who was on the show when Miri interviewed them, like, many weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was like
we are a tiny, tiny community and we all know each other.
Yes. Yeah, so apparently he's right. Like, all of the gays know each other and all of the trans know each other.
Mm. Pretty insular. Also at the Remembrance Day vigil, we saw Ro Allen speak. If you don't know, Ro Allen is sort of our Equality Commissioner for LGBTQ matters.
Yeah.
And they sort of announced during sort of a sharing session that they would be starting work on a project to work with coroners to sort of look into historic deaths and see if there are more trans people than we really know. Present there, and see, they said it's going to, you know, it's coming up, it's not a current in the works project, it's very early days, but I'm really interested to see how that develops, so we'll try and keep you updated on that situation as we go through.
I was really interested that actually the coroners in Victoria have a prevention office. So if there are trends in people's deaths, then they actually, prevention office then educates people. So part of this project isn't just about identifying people that were trans whose family maybe misgendered them or the police misgendered them, but actually once they are identified, are there any lessons that we can learn to prevent those deaths in the future? So I think that not only will it recognise the past, but it might change the future as
well. It's not just remembrance, it's also incredibly practical for like everyday trans people and how we're going to navigate the world.
And I found some words that I shared with some colleagues at work about the Day of Remembrance, and they were kind of guiding principles of the day, and the one that hits me the most is, those who cannot remember the past are doomed to repeat it, which is a fairly well-known phrase. It's also, it's up to us to remember the people who've lost their lives, because the killers and law enforcement and the media and their families often erase their existence or definitely, you know, misgender them. And I just want to say, as an ally, you know, transgender lives are affirmed and have value. And I think that we can all make a difference by not just on that one day a year, or not just on Trans Awareness Week, or not just on, you know, the US have Transgender Awareness Month, but every day showing up, speaking out on behalf of my friends and colleagues, and being there for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So coming up, we have an interview with Lucille Kerr, following up on the Latrobe study on trans health after the break.
Hey, you! Yeah, you, in the car! Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy in the car, just like you? Right now, times are really tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to make your drive around Melbourne fun. So tell your siblings, your workmates, heck, even wind down your window and tell someone else stuck in the traffic to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
That song is Young Republicans by the band Lower Dens. So they're a shoegaze duo from Baltimore, fronted by trans mass singer Jenna Hunter. That song was from their 2019 album, The Competition. But the reason I really like that song, and it is one of my favorites of theirs, I do really like this band, is because it got the blacklisted from a couple of US radio stations because it makes fun of conservative, rich youth, especially if you watch the music video. But I think it's pretty light. Like, it's just a really good song. And if you don't listen to the lyrics, you don't even know.
Yeah.
So, aside from the title, Young Republicans, I guess. But you could also take that the other way as a celebratory song, which it is definitely not. Yeah. But, yeah, so that's who we're playing tonight in the artist highlight, Lower Dens, an awesome trans rep for our music.
In this section, we mentioned about Lucy Kerr.
Lucy is a researcher at La Trobe University who has done some amazingly insightful research around the experiences of the trans and gender diverse communities with accessing mainstream health services. So, just first question, what is your background and why did you want to do this research?
Well, I'm a specialist cancer nurse. So, I started out with my Bachelor of Nursing and then I did honours research, which was actually on aged care for trans and gender diverse people. And what emerged from that was kind of, I suppose, a little bit of a side issue, but it came up, and that was that people just didn't want to attend for cancer screening. So being a cancer nurse, I kind of understood the ramifications of that, which aren't good, you know. It can lead to an increase in morbidity and mortality. So I saw kind of that there was that gap in knowledge there and awareness, and that there was a need for the research, so I decided to take up a PhD on it.
And do you have a connection to the community in any way, or?
No, I don't. Just an ally. I mean, I think for me, it's just a belief that everyone deserves the same level of quality in their healthcare, and a recognition that the trans and gender diverse community just aren't really receiving that at the moment.
Yeah, it's actually really good to hear when people just say, oh, no, I'm just, you know, think people should be treated right, instead of being like, well, actually, I have a child and that made me start.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
like, oh, no, I'm just care about people, so, you know.
So Lucy is just another human being
yeah.
and truly sticks to her profession, you know, like providing yeah. care for all kind of people. That's so wonderful. So how did you recruit your respondents?
So it was mostly through Facebook advertising and something called snowball sampling. So it looks like around a third was from snowball sampling. And that just means that it's basically word of mouth. So I had heaps of help from the community. They were really, really supportive. So I'm really appreciative for that. Thanks to everyone that helped. I was also on the Gender Agenda actually helped me to recruit yeah. participants at the time as well.
A while
so that
back.
Was
I remember that.
So thanks to Joy as well for helping me there.
Yeah.
And I think I got a really great sample size from that. So I think community is a great way to be getting the word out about research.
So you found that half of people with a cervix eligible for cervical screening never had a healthcare provider recommend this. Do you know why this is?
Well, we didn't, there wasn't follow-up questions, but I would anticipate a lot of it is because perhaps healthcare providers aren't aware enough. They don't know to ask. They're not yeah. having those kind of really the conversations that they need to be having, basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those findings around cervical screening, I think, are a huge concern. Only 18% said that they were regular screeners, and more than half had never been for a cervical screen. So there's a lot of work, I think, around that. And it's probably mostly just raising awareness among healthcare providers that this is an issue.
I think it also comes from, as a trans man, it comes from us as well. Just we need to sort of encourage each other and be like, no, we actually have to do it, even though it seems like horrible. Like, I think the community also needs to look around at each other and be like, no, we actually have to do this, you know? I think it's both sides need to encourage, you know, this like education on both sides that's necessary.
Yeah. It's so nice. You know, for me, I thought it was just, you know, misogyny within the healthcare system, you know, just simply because having cervix is a very female thing and they just yeah. discriminate against women in general.
I even think it could be just, you know, they come in, like someone like me comes in, if I'm just seeing a GP and they see my beard scruff and they go, they forget that it's like a thing to recommend. You know, I don't even think it's malicious. It's just a bit of a hole that we have in sort of assumptions in society.
Mm. And then, so with your outcome, and it was very insightful, Have you had a chance to meet with the Department of Health and Human Services in Victoria to discuss your findings?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't yet been able to meet up with them. I do believe that copies of the report have been passed on to them, so that's hopefully, you know, that's promising. And I also, I did meet with the Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality, Ro Allen, and obviously they were very supportive and wanted to do as much as they could to help to get the recommendations met.
So you make several recommendations in your report. Can you explain your top recommendation or recommendations?
I mean, I think it is actually pretty basic. I think it's just person-centred care. So I think healthcare workers, to be able to provide, need to be aware and informed. So yeah, training and education are both really important. But aside from that, it's just really the person-centred care. So the healthcare providers need to be communicating well with their patients and they need to have empathy. You know, it's something that the healthcare providers are taught to do and should be doing anyway. But I think there's just that gap in knowledge that's making it hard for them at the moment. So hopefully with, you know, training and awareness raising that, you know, it'll be improved.
Do you think, because for me, I have a background in science myself, and medical science or health sciences can be quite linear and binary in the way of thinking, especially when we are so used to century-old terminologies and all of that. Do you think that would actually impact on this result we have now?
I have certainly heard from, because I did interviews as well as the survey, I've certainly heard from people, you know, who have experienced cancer going through the system and stuff, just how gendered the system can be, how gendered, it's just the assumptions that healthcare providers make. And I think it's a very sort of material body thing with medical sciences, where it is so focused on the body, so they have this rigid kind of view that isn't necessarily as flexible as having a more social kind of understanding of things.
So whether trans-related or not, do you have a next project that you're working on or something upcoming for you?
Well, I'm still just going through. So I released the report, but for me, the PhD will still take a little bit to finish. So I'm just working on journal articles and trying to, you know, produce the right journal articles that will sort of help for the future. So, writing one on cervical screening and problems accessing care. So, that'll take up my next year and see what happens after that, I guess.
Yeah. So for me, I'm quite curious because usually with social movement and visibility, trans women or feminine identifying individuals are more visible.
Yeah.
But in the media release, there's more of masculine identifying individuals in the report. Would you be able to explain?
The stories that were published or the media released were just chosen by the media department because they were the ones that they thought had the most pull, but in terms of that was, they were my interview participants. So I had 12 interview participants and I think 4 were trans men, 4 were gender diverse and 4 were trans women. So I had a good spread there. So once I can start writing an article on that, then, you know, more, that can be sort of more holistically looked at.
Well, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. I, you know, haven't made my way through the entire thing, but I actually, it was really, really interesting. So thank you so much for coming in to speak to us.
And thank you for your wonderful work as well.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Trans POV on Joy 94.9. You're here with Rowan, Anna and Karen, and we're about to talk about film and gaming in regards to trans people. So, Anna, you're a gamer, I hear.
Yes, and apparently a lot of people, especially straight males, are very surprised by this. Like, I play Grand Theft Auto and I play Pokemon and I still play Diablo and Counter-Strike sometimes. So,
But, there's a video game coming out. We touched on this on the breakfast show on Monday, but it's called Tell Me Why. If anyone who has played Life is Strange, it's by the same people. So, Life is Strange, I don't know. Have you guys played that game?
Nope.
Yeah, didn't think so. But it's sort of like they do magic, but it's magical realism, but they often ground them in like... The last ones have all been like either teen or children main characters who are dealing with teen, children, home life problems, or being queer, like Life is Strange. And so they are kind of the right people who I trust more to handle this topic, but it's going to be have the main character, a playable character, the first trans man you can be as a playable character in any big gaming studio. So not to take Checkpoint's topics off them, but... Yeah, I don't know. I'm really excited for that. I actually might play this game. I'm terrible at actually playing the games I'm interested in, but I actually probably will do this one.
Well, you'd rather read a book normally.
Well, I just don't have the time nor any skill. Just any skill in gaming. Zero.
So, Anna, earlier you were actually saying to me that since you started the hormones, you actually think that you have better dexterity and hand-to-eye coordination.
Yeah, like I feel like I can multitask a lot better, right? And because... Before hormone treatment, I could not play Grand Theft Auto quite successfully, and quite as quite an anarchist as I am in the game these days. So, yeah, so that's fairly interesting because you told me how the arguments women top often is that they lack the spatial awareness and the coordination, but. For me, I actually improved. Like, I improved with everything because, like, I feel like my senses are heightened. So, yeah, like, it's just a lot better.
So, fantastic. It's not just like you just got really good because you spent more time.
No, it's you know what I mean. I hardly have time.
Estrogen really. Is a superpower.
Yeah, it's like a super. And speaking of games, you're opening ways. Well, this is another reason why I keep playing Pokemon, apart from introducing cross dressing culture with Jesse and James.
Mm.
The most recent games of Pokemon Sword and Shield, the opening scene, instead of asking whether you're a boy or a girl, they ask you, which of the characters below do you look like the most?
The thing is, like, I don't think most people would even care. Like, that's such a small detail, but it's actually incredibly meaningful when you're a trans person, especially a non-binary person. Because, like, there's a lot of games where it's like, even if you are... you know, yeah, all right, I'm a trans man, fine. I can pick the man gender, that's fine. But then you also, like, they'll be like, these are your clothing character options for dressing your character, and then the women's options will be these only options. And it's just like, oh, God, like, can't we it doesn't actually need to be that way. It's just coded that way for essentially no reason.
Mm. It's like a few weeks ago we talked about the fact that there are now some non-binary emojis.
Mm.
Out there, so you can have male, female, or somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And while it probably doesn't matter to anyone who identifies at either end, it matters a hell of a lot to people that are gender diverse.
All additive. It's not like taking anything away. It's a new emoji. It's not like we're removing gender from emojis. We're just being like, oh, here's another option if you want it. Mm. But it also, I always think about like when are we going to get to a point, like, you know, I think of like the Oscars or like big award ceremonies where they're like best actress, best actor, best supporting actress, best actor. What is a non-binary, when are non-binary people going to become like significant enough that either they just stop doing that or there's like another category? And when are they going to open that category? Because I'm assuming there's going to be a point where it's like there's maybe... two or three significantly famous non-binary actors and they have to win every year.
That, I think it's the same with sport.
Yeah.
Right? And without getting too far into it, you know, in elite sport, there's an argument to be said to allow clinicians to have some say in male versus female categorization. But in non-elite sport, you know, in triathlon, we have age groups, but we have male age groups and female age groups.
Yeah.
And certainly in Half Ironman and in Ironman, women are actually outperforming men and catching men quicker. And some of the biggest endurance races this year have actually been won right out by women. So at some point in the not too distant future, I can see an endurance sport like triathlon going to just age groups for non-elite and then having male and female for the elite.
Yeah, my mom did the Ironman in Kona when I was like 14, I think she got like 9.5 hours or something. My mum's insane. She's an athlete. But like, that's the thing. Like, both my parents are very sport people, which I am not. And I've had this argument with them so many times. I've had arguments with my dad about like, nah, I reckon football should just be played like, you know, especially if you're like a local football, I'm like, why is it separate? Because I remember our local team, which is important to our family, like just the local little league type deal was just like, why do they like brought in a women's team? I'm like, can't they just let the girls be in all of the age groups? Because one, they were struggling to fit, like get girls for every single age group because it was a new thing. And then they were going like, oh, well, I guess there's no demand. And I'm like, no, maybe just like open up. Because they're like under 10s and who cares? Like, it doesn't matter. They're 10.
And actually, at the 15. Age of 10, the girls typically are bigger than the boys anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like at the age of like 12 to 13, it changes. But
Yeah.
Interesting.
We also have the Tilda Film Festival. We spoke to them a few weeks ago. That lineup is coming. That's starting next week.
Yeah, it is. So the opening night is on next Thursday at more or less the same time as our show. They're playing Becoming Colleen and Framing Agnes. But there's a whole load of things happening, and we'll talk about some of them next week as well. There's a youth session on Friday, which is a fabulous collection of local and international dramas and documentaries around young, trans and gender diverse people.
And then on Friday, later after youth session, you have Venus Plus Chitia. Venus by Aisha Majara. It's like a comedy drama based around a South Asian transgender woman going through trials and tribulations of coming out to friends and family and the society. And then somehow she discovered that she had a teenage son who she conceived with a former high school girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And then Chitia by Vishnu Prasad is about discovering a roommate suicide and, you know, sort of go into introspective journey, you know, in Indian mythology and the whole gender binary sort of strict way and, yeah, of the childhood and a gut-wrenching but ultimately uplifting portrayal of growing up third gender in southern India.
You've been hanging out with...
with the Hishras.
Yes.
Yeah. So the bunch of Hishras I've met and I've been trying to promote is they are like Indian-based Malaysian. So there's another layers of persecution they have to run from, especially from the Muslim community as well. So very moving stories, you know, very rich as well. So yeah.
Yeah.
Talking of trans movies, I really want to talk about this because you put in our sort of group chat this week an article sort of praising the movie Boys Don't Cry, which if you don't know is... what, 1998 or 9?
20 years ago.
So, wow, 20 years ago. Oh, my God.
It's the anniversary now.
I was one.
I was much older than one.
You don't have to give a number.
I'm twice your age.
Okay.
At least.
But, yeah, so we were talking about how that movie for you was really affirming, and then me, when I was older and watched it, was really traumatizing, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but do you want to like talk about that? Because I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, to start with, thank you for picking me up on it. So in the chat, I said, you know, as a butch lesbian, I found it really affirming, and it was the first time I realized that a woman could be trans, and very correctly, Rowan, thank you, someone who was defined as female at birth.
Yeah, so DFAB is a really good term if you don't know that.
Yeah.
DFAB or DMAB is like defined female at birth or designated defined, one of those words. It's just a really good overarching term to just chuck in when you don't know what to say.
Yeah, so for me, it brought an awareness of... trans guys. I think I had some experience with, you know, drag queens and some trans women, but I didn't even know. I probably did know some trans guys, but I didn't know that they were trans guys at the time.
Well, I think we historically have been like lumped in with the butch lesbian community, even like by choice. It's not like if you go back like 100 years, they were the same thing. Historically, we can claim there's a lot of like people who you're like, well, it's hard to know. It's very hard to know if they were alive today, what they would identify as. So you kind of have to leave it. So we have a shared history, and even though I'm a gay trans man, I did identify as like a butch lesbian before I came out, not because I really understood what I was doing, I was just a teenager, but because I saw that community and went, I think that's where I want to be, because that's the, like, I looked at them and saw the style and the sort of community they had and went, didn't know that being a trans man was an option, and went, I guess that's right. And so I tried to do that, and then went, and then eventually learned that being trans and a man is a thing, which is hard to find out about sometimes, and went, oh, shit, okay, yeah. And had to, like I think a lot of trans men do, like, go through the stepping stone, because we don't learn enough in school or at home about transgender people when we're kids. So in the media, there was butch lesbians, not very much, but more than there was trans men. And so when I was, like, a teenager, I was still was identifying as like a butch lesbian at the time when I watched Boys Don't Cry, and one, I don't do violence very good, and so I didn't know what the movie was about. Someone just said, oh, this is a movie about a lesbian, and I went, I'll watch it. And then I watched it, and it was really triggering and horrible to watch, just because it has a lot of, like, it's a true story, it has, like, really confronting themes, and also because I was like, oh my god, what is this? And I didn't know why I was upset. I think so it's not just the movie, it's also partially, like, a personal thing. But I think, like, for a long time, Boys Don't Cry has, like, been like the trans man movie, and there's obviously a lot of, like, issues we can see with the film. It now being like, well, it's a cis female actor, which is not something that's great, but it's also 20 years ago, so what do you do? But I think also, like, the depiction of, like, the violence is just really hard to watch if you're actually a part of the community, as opposed to, like, being, like, adjacent to the community. And so also being an adult watching it is very different to being, like, 14 or 15 or whatever I was. So, you know, just go into the movie with prior knowledge of that kind of stuff, and you might actually, like, get something out of it, even if you are a trans man. But I haven't watched it since then, and I'm probably not going to watch it.
No. Are there any films that you find affirming, like, around the
not
trans?
Not going to lie. See, there aren't any.
I came from Vietnam, right? And then so the government really controlled the media. And in my time, when Silence of the Lambs first came out, so interesting enough, like, they do control the content we watch, but they don't censor it. So at a young age, I was like, what, 5 years old when Silence of the Lambs came out? Ish, 5-ish, or maybe younger. And the first, yeah, so Buffalo Bill scarred me for life. And I think that somehow delivered a message to my parents that, yeah, like, these are the degenerates. You know, and also, because in that particular neighborhood, the poorest family has a trans lady, and she was sort of mentally ill, and she was treated very badly within that particular neighborhood, and she constantly had, like, stuff thrown at her. So for me, it's not a pretty childhood to grow up in if you were trans.
I'm still waiting for a good trans guy movie to really like. There are some guys in TV shows and stuff, but I mean, there was one movie that was meant to come out a few years ago, and then it was never released.
Do you
by
mean
the
Scarlett Johansson?
No, oh, no. Right. There was one that was made, and it was about, like, a teenage trans boy, but it was played by a cis. It was meant to come out the same year as The Danish Girl. The trailers were released around the same time, and then The Danish Girl came out, and then they just decided never to release it. So it's just sort of in limbo somewhere. But that movie exists if you want to, I don't know, hack into a giant studio and get it.
Let's look it up.
Because we usually bring topics and world news to discuss. I thought it'd be really interesting. So the UN has determined that the Australian media's coverage of trans issues is a breach of our human right. And it's an article from the Australian Guardian, which is really interesting to me because the Australian and American Guardians are really good when it comes to talking about trans issues. And the UK Guardian gets a bit turfy and has had some pretty, like, rad femme reporting on trans issues in the last few years, I think.
Almost like in New South Wales Greens.
Yeah. Because I think, like, earlier this year, the American Guardian, like, literally went, hey, stop it. Like, no. Because, like, they're run by completely different people, but they are associated, and they're like, hey, no, you can't say that. You can't be making those kinds of comments. So both, like, one, I think it's really interesting, but, like, how do you guys feel about Australian media coverage in the last, I guess, like 5 years?
Well, I think anything that's owned by the Murdoch family is going to be
bad.
Bad. I think clearly it's coming from one side of the tracks, and we quite often on the show when we're talking about things, I'll have two different articles about the same topic, and one comes from something that's liberal and is talking about the positives, and one's talking about the negatives.
Yeah, it's really funny because sometimes we do bring topics that it's like, well, this article did hate us, but we're going to talk about it because we disagree with them.
It's kind of interesting to see, like, the fight. Like, it's just like two siblings fighting each other.
But it does affect people, and it kind of, I guess, says a lot about what is
different in
I guess, Australia, America, and the UK. I think the America, like, feminist groups are much more supportive of trans women than in the UK. I think that's pretty apparent, at least high up in the running of, like, a lot of, like, old school feminist groups that have been around for a while. And then in Australia, we're a little bit, like, I don't know, I think we're still in this in-between like we usually are.
But
we're also not as... I don't think we're in the news that much.
But at the same time, like, you know, we constantly mirror America. And recently, Hillary Clinton, you know, made a statement around trans rights is a threat to feminism. And have you read that?
I think you need to read the whole thing.
Yeah, I did read her statement. And I was like, okay, so it's interesting how the media saying that, you know, she's a bit transphobic in her statement. But then I read the whole interview, and she did give certain explanation. Kind of makes sense.
There is nuance to it.
Yeah, like, you know, like, she, of course, she had been trained and she had been prepped to deal with these things as well. We really don't know what the politician thinks, honestly. So yeah, but it's interesting to see that through a third party it just got smeared and.
Yeah, yeah. On the same topic, actually, I was reading earlier that the Scottish Parliament decided that for the Trans Awareness Week that they would run an event, and they obviously just Googled, like, trans experts or trans opinions, and they got a feminist on who had done many, many articles, TERF articles, but they'd done it by accident because they believed that she was... pro-trans, but they hadn't read what anything she'd actually written.
I think that's, like, a problem because I mentioned TERFs to people and they're like, I don't know what that is. And I'm like, oh, you live in a dream. Like, because, like, I think a lot of people outside of the trans community don't know what a TERF is. So it stands for Exclusionary Radical Feminist. And it's sort of a sect of feminism that is incredibly harsh towards trans women and, I guess, view trans men as just sort of brainwashed and sad women. That's the sort of vibe I've got. They don't talk about us much. It's sort of easier for them if they don't mention us. But when I have seen them sort of talk about trans men, they're just like, those poor girls. And it's like, okay, all right, weird, but okay. There's also the in lighter news, there's a trans dad and his wife who used his eggs to have a son, but his wife carried the baby, which is kind of like having a chimera because then she doesn't have any, like, DNA connection to the baby.
No, but she did carry the baby.
No, but it's like, because that's possible even without, like, that's what I mean, it's like a chimera that can happen where, you know, you don't have a DNA in common with your baby. There was a law, it was a court case about it a while ago where they were like, well, this doctor's like, well, I did see this baby, like, be birthed out of this woman, and they're like, well, her DNA results are not matching this child, and they found out, like, she has a rare genetic condition that means, like, this can happen. But it's really cool because it's like they had someone else like, I believe, what's it called, inseminate, I don't know, these
IVF,
the IVF process. And so I guess that it's cool how they've sort of... I've never heard of a trans and cis couple using this method to both kind of be a part of the experience, if you know what I mean. Because, like, obviously he had to detransition slightly so his ovaries could work to the extent that they could be, like, used. and then retransition again.
Unless he'd saved the eggs before.
No, I read that he actually had to do that, which is like a lot of commitment. Like, I think he had to do it for like 6 months or more, which is like a lot to have to deal with, because, you know, your estrogen kicks back in and it can be really annoying, but also just really emotional to have your hormones literally be up and down in that way. But I don't know. I just think it's sort of like, yeah, because I've never considered doing that. Like, it's never been something I cared
about. But you
come from
a big family, so would you like to have kids one day?
Well, it's not about, like, whether I'd want kids. I come from a family that has had a lot of adopted and fostered people, like a lot of people on my mom and my dad's side. I have heaps of cousins who I'm like, oh yeah, right, you're adopted. Like, I just would forget, and or fostered, or my mom and a lot of her siblings spent some time in care. And so for me, it's like there's never been really a genetic issue. Like, so I understand to an extent like this being important to some people, but I'm also like, that seems like such an effort to go through, like a really cool and amazing effort, and I'm not gonna tell them that's a bad idea. I just personally don't, like, I can't understand it when there's kids waiting to be adopted. I don't know.
Well, Anna, you were saying to me earlier, you are super broody at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, I guess like the more estrogen seeps into my body, like the prettier I get. And it seems like I'm the only pretty person in the room right now.
Well, Roman like wanted to show me a picture of a kid earlier and I was like almost running away.
I was like, this is my cute 12-year-old sister all dressed up in a costume. And you were like, darn, nah, can't do kids. I'm like, okay, that's cool. She's really cute though, but all right.
Again, like, you know, if you're as pretty as I am and identify as a trans female, then like there's hope, you know, that you can actually now have your like an implanted uterus.
Yeah, there's been
they're looking at whether or not you can have a transplant. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also so some trans woman out there successfully breastfed her baby as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just adjust the hormones and all of that. So that's amazing. I mean, I would love the idea of carrying a person inside me, but, you know, I will lose my thighs, so perhaps not.
Priorities.
Priorities, yes.
I don't know, priority. I'm still just kind of amazed at how, like, science keeps progressing for trans people. Like, every year or month, there's just this new article where they're like, and they managed to do this, and I'm like, they what?
Next week...
We are going to be talking to Jeremy from TDG Health Ballarat, who is a part of a really, really cool initiative for trans people. Mm-hmm. Also, if you are a trans musician or have one to recommend, or you have a message for us or an event you want us to call out, please email us at transpov@joy.org.au. Thank you for being on radio with me tonight. This is not going to be going on for too long because we're going to be switching over.
2 more weeks
of all of us together, hopefully. Good night to everyone.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.